Chapter 10 Skull Masks. Castor. Phobos and Strix had yet to return. Castor remained in the smelter pit with Severus. It had been quiet since they had descended underground, the greenskins seemingly unaware that so many of Shabbat Alpha's deep-sunk storage containment blocks and access tunnels had remained open despite the rock's devastation. The smelter pit itself was a good example. With space in the industrial sprawl at a premium, it was a workshop that had been sunken down into the city's bedrock, its fume and waste flumes and ventilation shafts keeping the metal presses and bench lines from being shrouded in toxic smoke. 100 labourers would once have filled the subterranean space with the pounding of hammers and steel, but now it was deserted, tools gathered neatly, great sheets of plate stacked awaiting the presses and moulds. Like the print shop, the everyday orderliness was a surreal counterpoint to the ruination that Castor knew was heaped just above. Severus sat down beside the broken-down entrance to the maglev subway line. Castor took a seat on one of the solid metal workbenches across from him, the frame groaning beneath his weight. Time seemed to pass with infuriating slowness, defying the chaplain's attempts to ease it along with a string of murmured prayers from the Lectato Psalter. Even disregarding the desire to find Polixis, to be so deep in enemy-infested territory without being able to strike was anathema to Castor. In the silence of the pit, he found his thoughts straying, doubts materializing, like one of Severus's death brothers from the shadows. He should not be here. He should not have abandoned the Fulminata. The entire venture was almost certainly hopeless, and was going to cost the chapter not only his own life, but the lives of the Reavers as well. Polixis would have stopped him. He could almost hear his older brother's words, as stern as the chaplain's when he wished them to be.
"The chapter comes before your personal quest for honour, Castor. It must come before everything, even before you and me. You know that. Yet I must be the one to repeat it to you."
He realized one hand had strayed to Salve Imperator's maglocked haft, as it so often did when darkness surrounded him. He forced himself to set the rising doubts aside. He had considered his course, decided upon it, and now had no choice other than to maintain it. The fruits of the seeds of doubt were death, defeat, and dishonor. He turned to Severus. The Reaver hadn't moved since taking his seat, a dire, death's-edge shadow on Castor's optic enhancers. After considering him, the chaplain spoke.
"When Lieutenant Tyrannus gave you this assignment, what were your immediate thoughts?"
Severus's eyes darted up. He said nothing for a while before responding.
"I was pleased. I considered it a challenge. A challenge because it is unlikely to succeed. Because it offers numerous operational difficulties that will push both my own abilities and those of my death brethren. I suspect you would get on well with my brother if you conversed with him more often. You are both adept at avoiding questions."
"You mean we are both more analytic in our responses than you, brother chaplain?"
"I suppose it's a matter of perspective,"
Castor said, allowing himself a tight smile.
"Is perspective something you permit yourself to indulge in often?"
"It's usually an unwholesome luxury," he admitted.
The pit lapsed into silence once more. Castor resisted the urge to unchain his copy of the Lectato again. He'd insisted on bringing it, despite its unwieldy nature and the covert status of their mission. It was chained about his waist along with Polixis's gladius. The two items were the only concessions Severus had allowed. Castor found himself reflecting on how unnatural it felt to be under strict orders. It had been a long time since he had been subjected to the barked commands and stinging rod of his reclusium superior, and his rank as chaplain afforded him numerous privileges beyond the command structure of regular battle companies, privileges that he now realized he had come to take for granted. His current situation exemplified his own presumptions. He had allowed his arrogance to deceive him into breaking with the letter of the Codex Astartes. The realization sent a pulse of anger through his thoughts, and that in turn left a cold, bitter wake of shame. His reflexive response to any difficulty had become one of fiery rage. He understood that now, understood that at times he was too close to becoming just another deranged zealot, one who justified his own increasingly radical actions by measuring them against a false belief in his own high standing. This was the consequence of breaking the letter of the Codex Astartes. These were the seeds of pride and arrogance. The realization haunted him. He spoke to Severus once more, seeking release through idle words.
"Were you disappointed to be drawn away from the front line?" "I am a reaver. I do not belong on the front line," the Death Brother said tersely. "I belong behind the enemies, or in their midst. The skills of my brotherhood are not fully realized if they are fighting the Emperor's enemies face to face. We are better employed elsewhere." "And what about your two brothers, Strix and Phobos?" "You need not concern yourself, Chaplain Castor. None of the Death Brethren required any urging to volunteer for this operation. In fact, Scaris wanted to knife fight for the honor. An undertaking such as this is the very purpose we exist for. Besides, it is for Helix. Any of us would die for him."
There was emotion behind the statement, even though it was delivered with Severus's usual cold inflection. It made Castor's heart beat faster as his mind turned once more to Polixis. That even the Reaver, seemingly so cold, so removed from the rest of the Brotherhood, held such respect for the apothecary, reaffirmed everything Castor believed. Bringing Polixis back was something worth dying for.
"We must find him, my dear brother," he said quietly, "for all our sakes."
Polixis. Whatever form of patience Urgork possessed, it seemed to have run out. The warlord appeared to be in a foul mood, as Polixis jolted from his catalepsian node rest. Weak sunlight filtering in through the basilica's broken windows, and the gaps smashed in its walls and roof.
"Dark!"
the warlord bellowed as he mounted the apse, his small eyes fixed on Polixis. The Medicae Orc hurried to attend its master, fumbling with its satchel of syringes and tools. Urgork stopped before the rack and cast around, mismatched eyes raving with a hint of mania.
"Where's that git Grimtooth?"
he bellowed. One of the commandos was shoved to the front of those who'd been guarding Polixis. Frozen before the hulking patchwork monstrosity, it managed to stammer some sort of explanation in a tongue too guttural for Polixis to comprehend. Urgork let out a snort of pure frustration and thrust a hand out towards the Medicae. After a few seconds of fumbling, the runty greenskin passed a syringe to the warlord. The beast rounded back on Polixis, drool from his distended tusks splattering the Primaris.
"You is forcing me to take desperate measures," Urgork spat. "But I always wanted to see what the good stuff does to you big humies."
Urgork held the syringe up for Polixis to see. The foul-looking yellow liquid it contained, bubbling dangerously.
"Yous might feel a little prick," the orc said,
and plunged the needle into the apothecary's left tacit port. The effect was immediate. Polixis felt a pain like nothing he had ever experienced before shoot from the entry point, immediately diffusing his left thigh, hip, and groin. Usually, even the worst agony would only flare for a few seconds before a Space Marine's enhanced physiology overcame it. A three-part process of deadened nerves, hyperpotent stims, and cranial surgery meant that there was almost no chance of a member of the Adeptus Astartes being incapacitated by his injuries. This pain, however, did not go away. It grew. Polixis gritted his teeth against it, muscles taut, trying to focus through the agony he could feel spreading through his body. He was sure the substance he'd been injected with was the same one Urgork used to control his fits, yet it acted more like a poison than any stimulant or suppressive. He could feel it burning through his body, travelling along his A-delta and C-fibre network, burning out flesh and nerve endings, and sending pain sizzling to parts of his brain that should have remained dormant. A cry escaped his lips, and he realized his limbs were straining at their bonds, threatening to buckle the metal. Urgork hadn't noticed, attention focused on Polixus's features as the Primaris fought against the anguish. Eventually, it lessened. The pain, which had spread all the way up his abdominal muscles and down past his left knee, began to recede. Polixus mastered himself, driving out the horrific ache the substance had left behind as it burned itself out. Normally, his Diagnoster helmet would have been screaming warnings at him, reading vitae signs ravaged by the orc's vile concoctions. Instead, he had only Urgork's hacking laughter as the beast yanked the syringe from his thigh.
"Good medicine, ain't it, Doc?" the beast demanded. "Makes you feel right as rain. But you see why I don't want to take it no more. You is gonna fix me up." "You will suffer in agony," Polixus snarled, spittle flecking his lips, "for the rest of your days, short though they may be." "Still mavin, ya git,"
Urgork snarled, his dark mood returning. He leaned in close.
"We've been zogging about together for too long. The lads is restless. Can't have the big boss sitting about playing with some humie while there's loads of crumping that still needs doing. So kill me,"
Polixus spat, defiance surging through his mind, fists clenching as he prepared to wrench them from their restraints.
"For I will never aid you." "I knows dat,"
Urgork said, rancid breath washing over the ultramarine.
"Known dat from the start. We could have done this the easy way, but the truth is, I wanted to see what you could take. Now I'm just gonna rip all I need to know right out of your skull."
The warlord turned and shouted something into the mob of greenskins crowding the basilica. Those nearest the front parted, pushing and shoving to get out of the way of the figure that limped up the apse steps in response to Urgork's summons. It was stunted, a runt not dissimilar to the Medicae, but this one's green skull was lumpen and distended, ringed by thin white hair. It carried a totemic staff in one bony hand. Strangest of all, it was blind, tapping its way ahead with the staff. Polixus had never heard of a creature without sight surviving in the barbaric environment that passed for greenskin society. The thing came to a halt before Urgork, cringing in the huge shadow of its misshapen master.
"This is the Beaky,"
Urgork said, pointing at Polixus, as though the smaller Xenos would be aware of the gesture.
"And this here is my boss, Weird Boy, Sly,"
Urgork said to Polixus, smacking the creature on the shoulder and making it twitch and groan.
"He's seen you before, Beaky, in a big dream while we was in mad space. This the one, ain't it, Sly?"
The greenskin tapped his way closer to Polixus, staff outstretched, the bits of bone, trophies and fetishes tied to it rattling. It sniffed and grimaced, milky eyes staring up at Polixus, and the apothecary found himself shuddering beneath its sightless gaze. He remembered the Medicae describing an orc psyker it hated, and he had encountered the crude shamanic warp users of the Xenos race before. The taint of witchcraft filled his senses.
"This one's trouble,"
the orc shaman said, growling like a small hound around a larger caged predator.
"He's gonna cause a lot of crumping real soon, boss."
"But he's the one,"
Urgork reiterated.
"He's gonna make me even bigger and stronger, ain't he?"
"He'll make you more killy,"
the psyker said, squinting up at Polixus, cuffing drool from its tusks with a spotted green hand.
"But it won't be easy, boss. His mates is coming for him.
Good, Urgork said bluntly. More cramping to do. Now get to work, Sly. Wasted enough time softening him up for you.
The orc psyker raised its hand and planted it on Polixus's breastplate. At first, nothing happened. But then the greenskin began muttering under its breath. Its eyes started to glow, suffused by an ethereal green energy. There was a crack, and verdant lightning ignited around its swollen cranium. Its thoughts came for Polixus, and he screamed once more. Castor. The Vox came back online fully just under half an hour before Strix and Phobos returned. Castor was still seated in the smelter pit when the sigil on his visor lit up again. He blinked the transmission icon without hesitation.
Prime Alpha, this is Salve. Do you copy?
He said. He tried half a dozen times since the signifier had first indicated they were once again within effective communications range, but the link had only just been fully established when the first response came back, brutally chopped by static.
Salve! This is Prime Alpha.
It was Lieutenant Tyrannus.
Confirm your location and status immediately. You are with the Death Brothers?
I am,
Castor answered.
Their operation is progressing as planned.
It is, Brother Lieutenant. We hope to make contact with the target in a matter of hours.
Then at least some good has come from your disobedience, Salve.
Alpha,
Castor began to say, but for once realized he had no words. He knew he had broken the chain of command, and in doing so, sundered the teachings of the Codex. No amount of explanation could hope to change that, and he would not disgrace himself further by trying.
You disobeyed my orders,
Tyrannus said, the ice in his voice audible even over the channel's interference.
You sundered your sacred charge and abandoned your battle brothers when they were in dire need.
I broke from your directives,
Castor admitted, trying to keep his voice level, the pain the lieutenant's words brought causing his fist to clench and his heart to pound harder in his breast.
If the Emperor's grace is sufficient to see me survive this venture, I will stand before your judgment.
No, you shall not,
Tyrannus responded.
This matter is now beyond the Fulminata. I will be reporting it to the Chapter Reclusium. You will stand trial before the Master of Sanctity on Holy Macrag when the time allows.
The words sent a chill through Castor, but he mastered himself quickly, forcing his voice to remain level.
As you wish. I pray to the Emperor and the Primarch that I survive to answer with all honesty.
I pray you do, Salve, Tyrannus said.
Prime Alpha,
Castor said, before Tyrannus switched the link to address Severus.
Have there been losses among the Brotherhood since I left?
Tyrannus said nothing, the line static crackling in Castor's ear. Eventually, he responded.
This link is not secure. May the Emperor guide you, brother.
The line went dead. Severus relayed what information the Reavers had gathered back to Tyrannus. Phobos and Strix added their own with their return. Both had bloodied blades. It seemed Shabbat's broken underworld was not as devoid of the green menace as they had first thought.
Word from Ridge 1, too,
Castor said, reviewing the data link that had finally been established, however briefly, with the rest of the Fulminata.
There have been 3 full-scale Xenos assaults since we departed. The line holds, though reinforcements are still being brought in from Croton. There have been 3 fatalities since we departed. The conflict is entering a new phase of attrition.
Castor knew that it was a phase he likely wouldn't live to see. Even if he did, Tyrannus's pronouncements had left little doubt about his future. Assuming he didn't perish on Ikara first, he would be summoned to Blessed Macrag, where he would stand before the chapter's assembled chaplains, reclusiarchs, and the Master of Sanctity, assuming the tides of war had carried enough of them home to form a council. That was the measure of Castor's disobedience. He was to be put on trial before his peers as a battle brother who had disgraced both his rank and the Codex Astartes. It was difficult to conceive of a greater shame. He had already failed. All he had left was the desire to find Polixis. A dark ennui gripped the chaplain's thoughts as he moved out with the Reavers once again, following the maglev subway line. It seemed fitting that this mission should cost him his life. He found himself praying for the opportunity to not only free Helix, but also give himself honourably in the act. That was the only way he could conceive of amending his disgrace. Such a possibility at least seemed attainable. The Reavers had done well, even by the usual standards of the Death Brotherhood. Strix had traced the maglev line close to the undercroft of the Basilica. Its foundations still stood strong, as much a part of Ikara as the bedrock it was buried into. While he didn't have direct access, Strix hadn't detected any greenskins within the crypt after scanning it. Besides the rock itself, the Basilica remained the most likely focal point of Orc leadership, as well as the location of any prisoners they still held. Reaching it from underground would be considerably easier than doing so on the surface. None of the Strike Force's members needed the Auspex to tell them that the area around the Basilica was infested with Xenos. They pressed on at a rapid pace, even the cold Reavers seemingly invigorated now that their hunt was nearing an end. It took less than 20 minutes to reach the point in the curving tunnel map-locked by Strix.
"Here," the Reaver said,
halting at an unassuming section of the subway and tapping the stonework with the tip of his long knife. The sound seemed no different from any other part of the line to Castor, yet the Auspex confirmed whatever Strix had detected. Thanks to the shifting of the earth beneath the city, they were now separated from the Basilica's crypts by only a narrow section of cracked tunnel wall.
"Melter charge," Severus ordered, gesturing to the base of the wall.
"And if the Xenos hear us entering?" Castor asked.
"We have to gain access to the Basilica. It's either this way or through the front doors, Brother Chaplain. As much as I suspect you'd prefer the latter, this is our best option. We must act now, before the Greenskins pick up our trail and follow us down here."
Phobos clamped a shaped melter charge to the base of the section of tunnel indicated by Strix. Castor unlocked Salve Imperata, sensing his doubts fall away as he felt the familiar skull-tipped weight of the blessed mace in his gauntlet.
"Breaching,"
Phobos said. There was a shriek of pyrum charge, a whoosh as a section of stonework was seared through, and a crack of tumbling masonry as the maglev wall gave way. The Primaris swept into the dust and smoke beyond, weapons ready. Polixis. The Xenos was in his mind. Polixis convulsed as green lightning suffused his body. It was not the crackling charge that harmed him, though. It was the presence of the alien psyche driving itself against his mental barriers. Its skinny, deformed body hid a potency far beyond the usual abilities of the greenskin race. Its intrusion was the most horrific, most violating thing the apothecary had ever experienced. Polixis could feel it ripping through his thoughts, laughing as it defiled memories, tearing and discarding them like a gleeful child. He could have crushed it in an instant with one hand, as could most of the greenskins in the Basilica. When its powers were unleashed, however, the runty creature had dominion over all. The servos in Polixis's armor were now fully operational once again, but his mind was completely impaired, forced into a state of pain-fueled paralysis by the thing's unnatural talents. After what felt like an eternity, it stopped. It drew its hand away from Polixis, and its lightning shorted out, though energy continued to crackle around its staff. Smoke was visibly rising from its cranium, and its tongue was lolling out from between its tusks as it panted for breath. It shook its head before turning to Urgork and the Medicae. It uttered something in its guttural tongue and pointed at Polixis.
"Again!"
Urgork snapped.
"Zap him! Again!"
Polixis didn't have a chance to spit his defiance before the lightning struck once more. Castor. Castor found himself in a dark, stony space, his auto-sensors picking out and highlighting features already logged previously by his armor. He realized he was back amongst the vaults and effigies of St. Alberic the Smelter's crypts. The place had changed since he and his brother had last stood in the dusty shadows. The crates of munitions the guard had been stockpiling had gone, looted by the greenskins. They'd left behind pallets, ripped plastic, dung, and indiscernible debris littered throughout the tombs and statuary alcoves. Some had started smashing and defiling the effigies of the fallen, or prizing open their resting places, leaving bones and mouldering scraps of funerary shroud scattered around. Given the cruelties heaped on so much that Castor held sacred, it might have been assumed there was only so much anger the chaplain could harbour. Still, though, he found his spirit ignite as he took in the crude blasphemies inflicted by the Xenos scum, the desolation they had caused in the sacred resting place of honoured imperial servants. The Reavers didn't pause to consider the state of the Basilica's crypts. Silently, they spread out through the darkness, bolt pistols and combat knives unclamped, hunting for anything that might have been aware of their entrance into the tombs. There was nothing, though. The place seemed deserted.
"They are nesting down here," Severus said,
indicating the refuse piles filling the alcoves and corners.
"We cannot stay for long."
"I didn't intend to," Castor growled softly.
Phobos took point as the four Primaris advanced to the crypt's primary stairway, weapons bared and ready for the smallest hint of discovery. As they began to climb, a sound reached Castor, echoing down from the basilica. It was the noise of someone in immense suffering. It only took Castor a few seconds to recognize that the sound was being made by his brother.
"Polixis," he snarled,
instinctively throwing himself up the stairs. Severus halted him, physically blocking the narrow stone passage. The black plate almost collided with the blue, and for a second, two skulls glared at one another, inches apart.
"You will remain here," Severus said,
voice clicking over the vox.
"He's alive,"
Custer replied. The words rasped over the helmet vox like embers that had been kicked back to life, sudden fire amidst red-edged ash. The heat in them would have given even fellow Adeptus Astartes pause. Severus didn't move.
"He is,"
the Reaver agreed, his voice a frigid counterpoint to the heat of the chaplain's words.
"And you will remain here until Phobos has ascertained what waits for us above."
"I cannot!"
Castor made to thrust the Reaver to one side, but froze a second before contact. Severus's blade had twitched towards his gorget, its steel a sliver of light in the dark.
"I will not allow you to compromise this operation," the Reaver said. "Not my life, the lives of my death brothers, nor even that of Helix will be put at risk because you cannot control your passions." "I am in control,"
Castor said, forcing himself to back away a step.
"You are not," Severus said bluntly. "You will go up there, and you will attack the first Xenos you lay eyes on. Even if you do reach Polixis and are able to free him, you will not be able to escape before being overwhelmed."
A scream pierced the air once more.
"He needs us!"
Castor snapped.
"And you will not help him by storming up there alone," Severus said. "The truth is that it's more than likely a trap. What other reason would they have for seizing and torturing him beyond luring more of us into their lair? Come to your senses, brother chaplain. There is no worse a time for your faith and fury than here and now."
Castor stifled an exclamation of pure rage. He held his ground on the stairs, neither pushing forwards nor retreating. Ahead, behind Severus, Strix had knelt, weapons ready once more as he faced up the stairwell. Phobos had vanished.
"Patience," Severus urged. "Trust in the Emperor, Castor."
The chaplain forced himself to loosen his grip fractionally on Salve Imperator. He did not seek out prayers or catechisms. The screams ringing down to him were prayers enough. Instead, he focused on rooting himself to the spot, denying his taut muscles the imperative to move. Control. It was his only saving grace now. It seemed to take an age for Phobos to return. Castor remained perfectly still, head bowed with the effort of restraint. Memories came back to him, like a sudden wind to whip up the flames once more. He was standing in the rough-hewn timber Agristed his birth family called home, outside the door of his brother's bedroom. The sallow, hook-nosed figure of Dr. Martell, the Agri Collective's Medicaid practitioner, had entered 20 minutes earlier, casting a dismissive glance at Castor as he passed. Since then, he had heard little coming from his brother's room other than soft sobs. The pitiable sounds made Castor's small hands clench into fists. According to their father, Polixis was feverish. Castor had remained there, by the closed door, too afraid to enter, but unable to abandon his brother, hoping that his presence and his loyalty somehow communicated itself to the older boy. The feeling of helplessness was one that, even at his young age, Castor had realized would never leave him. It was the sort of memory long wiped from Polixis's mind, but cruelly embedded in Castor's, seemingly for eternity. He had sworn he would never leave his brother helpless in the hands of another again. He had broken that vow, just one of many now. He was tired, sick to the core of what he had done in the past few days. It was time to end it. He realized Severus was no longer standing before him. He'd moved slightly further up the crypt stairs, and Phobos had reappeared at their top. The Reavers were relaying a hushed conversation between themselves. Polixis's screaming had stopped.
"He is up there," Severus said, turning back to Castor, "as is the Alpha-level target."
"The Warlord?" Castor asked.
"Yes. Phobos has positively identified Urgork and a number of other Xenos believed to be in his inner circle."
"What are they doing to my brother? How badly is he injured?"
"Physically, he appears almost unharmed," Phobos said, "but a greenskin witch is performing some foul rite over him."
Castor again moved towards the stairs, and again was firmly checked by Severus.
"This is an opportunity," the Reaver said, a hand planted firmly on Castor's ribbed breastplate. "All of your prayers could not have delivered us a better one, Chaplain. We have a chance here to not only remove your brother from the clutches of the Xenos, but also to strike off the head of the monster."
"I do not see how that will bring back the Fulminata's apothecary," Castor responded. "Eliminating the Warlord and freeing my brother at the same time would make exfiltration almost impossible. We would be surrounded and cut off."
"And Urgork would be dead. At the very least, the Greenskin's effort on Ikara would suffer a fatal blow. Shabbat would be completely retaken in a matter of weeks. The Wah across the neighboring systems might even collapse."
"You would make martyrs of us,"
Castor said, struggling to keep his voice in check.
"I would have us do our duty."
"If I could give my life to slay the beast, I would, without hesitation. You know that. But I came here to ensure that my brother lives. Even with Urgork dead, the Fulminata will need Helix. The Chapter needs him."
"Then the Chapter will have him," Severus said,
and for once, Castor got the impression that there was a hint of a smile behind the grim death mask.
"I am a sergeant of the Reavers, Brother Chaplain. There is a far better way to bring down the beast than with our own lives. Do you still have Vox contact with the Lieutenant?"
Chevik. General Chevik brushed forefinger and thumb along the tip of his moustache, eyes wandering from the holo display to Field Marshal Kloss's indicator marker, lighting up the salient parts of the battle map being beamed into the center of the command dome. It was the sixth or seventh full staff briefing in the past day, and the Vostroyan was dead on his feet. Damned if he would admit it, though. There were a gaggle of faces gathered around the display, not from his corps, all new arrivals from Croton. Thrown take him if he showed more than the most grudging of thanks at the arrival of their reinforcements, let alone hint at his own exhaustion. He forced his mind to focus on what Kloss was saying, running through the details of logistical military minutiae. There were delays in moving up munitions from the main artillery park to the emplacements along sectors 1 through 3 on the ridgeline, and the field marshal wanted to know why. These were the things that battles turned on, Chevik reminded himself, for what must have been the sixth or seventh time in the last hour. Raised voices came from beyond the dome's main entrance flap. A few of the staff officers glanced towards it. Kloss carried on, apparently oblivious, holding up a data slate report from a Kalistani Earthshaker commander who claimed in the event of another full-frontal greenskin attack, his batteries wouldn't have enough ordnance to adequately support his sector. The commotion outside rose. Chevik recognized the voice of the commander of the headquarters' Scion security detail. More eyes turned, and Kloss faltered, a look of anger crossing his scarred face. The flap snatched back, and the expression vanished. Filling the entrance was a Primaris space marine. A few of the new arrivals gasped audibly, and it took what little remained of Chevik's concentration to maintain his bluff, uncaring aura.
"Field Marshal Kloss," the warrior said, ducking into the space.
Chevik realized it was the same one he had briefed immediately after the withdrawal from Shabbat, though it was difficult to be certain. From what little he had seen of the Ultramarines, they all seemed to share the same strong, broad features and short, curling blonde hair.
"My lord,"
Kloss said, making the sign of the Aquila. The other guard officers clustered around the hollow hastened to do likewise.
"I come bearing vital news," the Ultramarine said. "But first, you must issue a front-wide command directive. Prepare all forward battalions to advance."